We are ready to start. Every time I go to share screen, my computer freezes up for a minute, so give me a minute. You're still there, right?
You're all still here, I think.
Yeah, I've lost the screen and I've lost the share and my computer's frozen. All I hear is audio. There we go. Okay, I don't know why that does that.
Back.
Yeah, I am back. Phyllis, I'm holding that little piece as a secret for a little while. Until it's ready.
We know now.
There you go. Till it's ready. All right. Okay. Last week we did Perek Chet, and I kind of linked Perek Chet to Perek Yud and spent the sheer set of kind of hopefully seeing the connections between the Prakim. We're actually going to study Perek Yud and the war that David has with the forces of Aram, Ammon, Moab, etc. We're going to see that in our next unit. And we'll go back and learn Perek Chet together with Perek Yud in much more detail. So I'm going to park it. I just will tell you that after the Shir, I found a bunch of really good maps to that whole approach. We're going to look at those maps in detail when we look at that chapter. If you want to take a glimpse at the maps, I've posted them together with the audio with the recording of last week's Shir. So there are actually on the Shul website there are maps to that story, but we will look at them in greater detail when we get to Perek Yud. So we're going to skip Perek Chet in depth. We're going to jump to Perek Tet, and we'll come to Perek Yud. We'll go back to Perek Chet at the time, and we really moved on from kind of the first part of David's life, sort of the pristine, the beautiful, the uplifting, the inspiring, the kind of the David in his in all of his glory, and this is the beginning of a different chapter in David's life, and unfortunately we know how it ends. It's a very dark chapter, and it's going to start from here and move all the way to the end of Sefer Shmuel. Nonetheless, it is, as they say, Torah hi v'lumod ani tzarich, right? It is part of Tanakh. It's part of the David story. There's much here that sometimes we wish had happened differently, but nonetheless, it is the case. So we're going to start with Perek Tet, and that's going to be a focus for a week or two, and then we'll go from there. Vayomer David. הכי יש עוד אשר נותר לבית שאול. ועשה עם החסד בעבור יונתן. Is there anyone left from the house of Saul? So that I may show them kindness for Yonatan's sake. So this question sounds a little bit left field, especially in the aftermath of what we've been reading. The answer to that question is, when did this parak take place? And that's not clear at all. Meaning, the story is a standalone story, and in many ways is a kind of a precursor to stories that will come later. We need to know who the characters are in this story. But its placement here chronologically is questionable. So I just put that out there that this question sounds like it's coming out of left field, out of nowhere. It's not clear when this story takes place, and so we're going to learn it as a kind of a standalone, independent of the events previously or subsequently. So David reaches out and he says, you know, he owes an oath, he owes a debt to Yonatan. He owes a debt to Yonatan. He promised Yonatan that he would always maintain a loyalty to Yonatan and to his household. That was an oath that Yonatan and David took way back in Shmuel Aleph Perek Chaf, right, when David and Yonatan separated officially, and David began his journey in flight from Shaul's wrath. They took an oath of loyalty to each other, a commitment, an oath of kindness. And David promised that he would always look after Yonatan's children. Just to kind of do a quick reminder of that oath, it's in Shmuel Aleph Perek Chaf. We're going to go down to V'yomer Yonatan al David, Lachav v'netzei ha'sadeh v'yetzu shnei ha'sadeh. This is the famous story with the arrows, if you remember, where we read it at part of Macha Chodesh. The whole story of Shaul trying to kill David. Yonatan's not sure, so he makes a deal with him, and he makes this arrangement in the field that if he finds out that Shaul is actually trying to kill him, he'll throw the arrows, shoot the arrows in a certain way. We learned that story a little while ago, a couple of years back. Vayomer Yonatan el David, Hashem Elokei Yisrael. Takes an oath by God, in the name of God. Ki echkor et avi ke et machar shlishit. I will investigate my father's intention. V'nei tov el David. And if it's positively inclined towards David, v'lo az eshlach elecha v'galiti et oznecha, I will let you know and I will inform you. Ko yaseh Hashem liyonatan v'cho yasif. Ki yetiv el avi et hara'a elecha. But I promise you that if my father's intentions are evil to you, to harm you, then galiti yotaznecha, I will let you know, v'shilachticha v'lachta l'shalom, and I will let you go in peace. V'yashem imach kasher ayayim avi, and I bless you, God should be with you like he was with my father. I think already here Yonatan knows that the potential heir to the throne is not Yonatan, but David. Kind of see that in this reference, the Hashem imach kasher ayayim avi. V'lo imadenu chai, v'lo taseh imadi chesed Hashem v'lo amut. Now the psukim here, grammatically, you know, it's one of those examples that we spoke about in Perek Zayin, where you have very emotional conversation, doesn't always match grammatical rules. And this is another one of those examples, because Yonatan's speech here is, all the rules of syntax and grammar, doesn't make a lot of sense, but the gist of it we can pull out. V'lo imadenu chai, v'lo tasei imadi chesed Hashem v'lo yamut. While yet I live, you should show me the kindness of God, that I shall not die. Clear what that means. But the next sentence is clear. V'lo tachrit et chazdecha me'im beti ad olam. Do not cut off the kindness you show to me and to my household forever. V'lo b'achrit Hashem et oyvei David ish mi'apnei adama. Nor when God has enabled you to destroy all of your enemies. In other words, one day will come and God will assist you to destroy your enemies. Don't count me among them. V'echot Yonatan in Beit David. So Yonatan made a covenant, a breach with David, that the Lord may destroy David's enemies. Don't count me among them. But Yosef Yonatan la'shibia et David ba'ahavato ato. So Yonatan made David take an additional oath, ki'avat nashoevo, because they have kind of had a soulmate kind of relationship. Vayomer lo Yonatan machachodesh, and then he goes to his whole rikhus about machachodesh. I'm going to skip the deal about Macha Chodesh for now with the arrows, and come to the end of this parak mem pasuk mem aleph. Sorry for scrolling so fast. Anar ba v'David kametz l'negev v'yipol la'apav arza v'yishtachos shalosh pamim. So after Yonatan realizes that Shaul's trying to kill David, and he tries to kill Yonatan, he throws the spear at him. Vayishku ishet re'eyu. They kiss each other. Vayivku ishet re'eyu. They cry. Ad David igdil. David cried more. We'll come back to that phrase a little bit later. Vayomer Yonatan le David lech l'shalom. Yonatan says to David, go indeed in peace. Hashem nishbanu shneinu anachnu b'shem Hashem lemor. With the oath that we have both taken, saying, Hashem yiyeh b'ni uv'necha uven zar'i uven zar'echa adolam. God shall be between you and me and between your children and my children, between our seed for eternity. In other words, that this breach that they've taken in the name of God is an eternal one, not just for their friendship, but also as an act of loyalty and chesed to each other's descendants. And this is the oath that David refers to here in our parak, he took an oath to repay Yonatan's relationship and loyalty with kindness, so he is ready to make good on that oath. Levet Shaul Eved Ushmot Tziva. The house of Shaul had a servant by the name of Tziva. Vayikru el David. So he was called, he was summoned to David's house, to the palace. Vayomer ha-melech elav, ha-ata Tziva? Are you Tziva, David says? Vayomer avdecha, I am your servant. Vayomer ha-melech, ha-efes od yesh levet Shaul ve-seimo chesed Elokim. Is there any survivors to the house of Shaul that I may show them kindness? Vayomer Tziva ha-melech, Od ben Yonatan nechei raglaim. Yeah, Yonatan had a son, a cripple. Nechei raglaim. Anybody remember the story of the of this child of Yonatan who was lame? No. Let's do a quick refresh. Perek Dalid of Shmuel Bet was where Shaul's son Ishboshet was assassinated. That story, remember, right? Vayishmash ben Shaul kimet Avner b'Chevron, when Avner was killed by Yoav. Vayipu yadav uchayison yifalu, Israel became weakened and feeble and frightened. And the next step is the two Givonim assassinate Shaul. We learned this perek together with Perek Chaf Aleph, the end of the story of the background of the Givonim, so that we could understand who these two Be'erotim are, individuals by the name of Shnei Anashim Sarei Gdudim Ayu Ben Shaul Shem Achad Ba'ana V'Shem Hashini Rechav B'nei Rimona Be'erotim Y'B'nei Binyamin Ki Gam Be'erot Techashev Al Binyamin. We connected that to the Givonim. Alright. Uli Yonatan, here, this pasuk is what I'm interested in. Uli Yonatan, ben Shaul, ben Nechei Raglaim. Yeah, this is Shmuel Bet Perek Dalet. Yonatan ben Shaul had a son who was lame, was crippled. Ben Chamesh Shanim Haya Bivo Shmuat Shaul V'Yonatan Mi'Yisrael. He was 5 years old at the time when the news arrived that Shaul and Yonatan and his brothers all died in the battle of Har Gilboa. Vatiseu omanto, and the nurse picked him up to flee Vatanos, Vahi Bechovzalanos Vaipol, in her hurry, in her haste to flee, she fell, Vaipaseach, and he became lame. What exactly happened we never know. Maybe his feet broke his feet, it's not clear, but he was considered a lame from that point forward. Ushmo Mephibosheth. That's the only reference we have to him here. He doesn't appear... Whoops, sorry about that. He does not appear in the rest of the story in Perek Dalet at all. It's just a way of telling us that there was one survivor to the household, because Ishboshet ben Shaul is about to get assassinated. And if you take out Shaul and all of the sons of Shaul, then there's nobody left to the household, except for, we should know, that there was one 5-year-old child who had survived. Now coming back to our perek, Perek Tet. So David doesn't know about Mephibosheth, and he inquires, is there any survivor to the house of Shaul? So Tziva says, yes. Vayomer ha-melech ha-efes od yesh ish lebet Shaul v'esei mo chesed olokim. Vayomer Tziva ha-melech od ben Yonatan. There's a son. He's a cripple and he exists. Bayomalo Amelech Efo. So David inquires, so where is he? How come I've never seen him? I've never met him. Where is he? Bayomet Sival Amelech. Hinehu Beit Machir ben Amiel Bilodvar. He's living in the, he's sort of an adopted child. He's living in the house of Machir ben Amiel in the city of Lodvar. Now, it's unclear where Lodvar is, but what is clear is that it's somewhere in the Gilad. If you remember the Gilad on the other side of the Jordan River, on the east side near Yavesh Gilad, sort of that region that has a long-standing relationship with the house of Shaul, that's sort of the area where he comes from. We know this much later from, I don't want to get too far ahead of myself, but all right. We know this in Perikutet, but we'll come back to that a little bit later. So this Tziva says that he is he's living out in Yavesh Gilad on the other side of the Jordan, sort of adopted by somebody there, I guess, with a kind of a sympathy for him. You know, it's hard for him to function on his own. He's a cripple. So Mechir ben Amiel adopted him, and he's living out there on his own. Why does Tziva tell him this whole story? First of all, why does it matter that he is...
Because he asked.
That he's handicapped. Like, why is it relevant? Seems to be a big part of the story. And we'll see it's a bigger part of the story than we think. And second of all, who is this Tziva? Well, what's he doing here? Okay. Vayishlach HaMelech David vayikacheyu mibet Machir ben Amiel milodavar. So David sends messengers, delegation of the king, to fetch this Mephibosheth from the house of Machir ben Amiel
milodavar. Hi, we just ate.
Busy boy?
We just ate.
Good boy. Is that what you're drooling?
Vayavo Mephibosheth ben Yonatan ben Shaul el David. So this Mephibosheth ben Yonatan ben Shaul comes to David. Vayipol al panav vayishtachu. Falls on his face. Bows down. Vayomer David Mephibosheth. David says to him, right, introduces himself. Are you Mephibosheth? Vayomer ine avdecha, behold your servant. Vayomer lo David, Al tira, don't be afraid. Why do we think David has to say, the opening two words David has to say to him is, don't be afraid?
Because he's from the house of Shaul.
Because normal behavior of most kings is, if you're from the house of your enemy, you're a wanted man, right? You have a mark on your head. So he doesn't understand what David is doing. David literally goes and he fetches this last descendant of the house of Shaul and brings him to the palace after everything that has transpired. You can imagine in Mephibosheth's mind that he's a marked man. And David says to him, Al tira, don't be afraid. By the way, it's especially true if this story is after, which we said it is after the story we read in Perikof Aleph, which is about the descendants of the Givonim who requested the execution of the seven children of Shaul. Remember that story? It's in the end of the Sefer, but we learned it earlier, which explains the background to those two people who wanted to assassinate Ishbosheth. And David had compassion on Shaul and did not, on Mephibosheth, and or this last child, and didn't include him. So it's especially true. But Yomalo David, Al tira, don't be afraid. Ki aso eseimcha chesed b'avor Yonatan avicha. I am going to do a special kindness to you. I'm going to bestow upon you a special chesed because of my loyalty to your father. Vashivotin lecha et kos de Shaul avicha. I'm going to return to you all of the possessions of your father's house, all of the lands that belong to your father. I'm going to return to you. This is the first time we're hearing about this. What lands are we talking about? So I'm assuming that Shaul had an inheritance, land, wealth, right? And after the death of Shaul and the death of the sons of Shaul in the battlefield, Mephibosheth is the last survivor of the house. They should all come to him. But Mephibosheth is sitting out in Gilad. So who's inherited all of the lands belonging to Shaul? So that's a question we'll come back to. But in the meantime, David promises to Mephibosheth all that inheritance. Kol Sdei Shaul Avicha, I will give to you. Number one. And number two, you'll never have to work a day in your life. V'yata tochal lecha malshuchani tamid. You are a ben bayit in my palace. You will live here. You will eat here. You will grow up in this palace. I will adopt you. You will eat bread on my table always. V'yata tochal lecha malshuchani tamid. So this Mephibosheth, who he's never met, didn't even know he existed, but he's the last surviving son of Yonatan, his dearest and closest friend, invites him to the palace. He promises him all the wealth of Shaul will come back to him, and he will live in wealth, and he will live in honor, in distinction, in the palace, and he will eat of the king's table. That's chesed. Right? That's a chesed. And I'll just point out that the word chesed appears in these seven psukim. The word chesed appears three times. Vayomer HaMelech, in Pasuk Aleph, Achi Yesh Od Asher Natal Beit David Ve'Seimo Chesed Ba'avor Yonatan. In Pasuk Gimel, Ve'Seimo Chesed Elokim. And in Pasuk Zayin, Ki asoa aseim cha chesed bavur Yonatan avicha. The core of David's being is this oath of chesed, which was the very promise that David and Yonatan had made to each other back in this parak, which was that they would, that this oath of chesed that stood between them. Go back to Pasuk Yud Dalid. ולא ימדנו חי ולא תעשה ימדי חסד השם ולא עמוד ולא תחוית את חסדך מעם ביתי עד עולם ולא בהחוית השם ותרווה איש, etc. The oath between them was one of chesed, and here David comes to repay that oath of chesed to Mephibosheth. וישתחו, bows down, ויאמר, מעבדך, who is your servant, כי פנית אל הכלב המת אשר כמוני, that you should look down upon a dead dog such as me. Which is really a very tragic statement of how Mephibosheth saw himself in this context. Sort of the sense of the lack of self-worth that Mephibosheth saw in his own existence, and how David has bestowed upon him the ultimate kindness with wealth and honor and dignity, and he says, what have I done to deserve this? Ki a kelev met asher kamoni, nothing but a kelev met. And at this point in time, you have to ask the question, which I'm sure David is asked and is clever enough to figure out, what happened to all of those lands that belonged to Shaul? He has just promised to Mephibosheth. What happened to them? Where were they? Somebody had to look after them, right? Who do we think looked after them?
Ziba.
Ulevet Shaul Eved Ushmot Ziba. House of Shaul had a servant, a slave. Maybe an Eved Knani, most likely. But the name of Tziva. So Tziva was, what, a servant, Evaknani, was in charge of looking after the fields. For what purpose? Vayikra HaMelech al Tziva Na'ar Sha'ul. So David calls this Tziva over. Vayomer Elav, and he says to him, Kol asher haya l'Sha'ul u'l'chol beto, natati leven Adonecha. All of the possessions that belonged to Sha'ul, I have given to the son of your master. That is an extraordinary, I have no other way to put it other than the ultimate patch upon him. To whom? To whom? To Tziva. In other words, David understands that what's just transpired is that he's discovered that Tziva has been sitting on all of the lands of Sha'ul. And instead of preparing them, protecting them, enabling them to go to Mephibosheth, to Ben Yonatan, the only heir, legitimate heir, he's been holding on to them. And so David says to Tziva, all of those lands, I've given all of it back to the son of your master. And you will now serve him. Look at what Tziva has amassed. You and your sons and your servants. What Tziva has amassed on the backs of this inheritance that he was not entitled to. All of that will come and you will give it to the son of your master. It will be bread to your master's son, and he will eat. And Mephibosheth, the son of your master, shall eat on my table. And just in case we were wondering, this poor Tziva, what had he done? Ulitziva 15 banim ve'esrim avadim. Tziva himself had 15 children and 20 servants. Now, you don't get to have your own 15 children and 20 servants unless you're conducted yourself in the manner of a master, not a slave. Right? Many wives, servants, people to serve him, wealth. Tziva is sitting on all of Sha'ul's wealth as if it belongs to him. And in the meantime, Mephibosheth, Ben Yonatan, the legitimate heir to the throne, who is a cripple, who's a handicap, is sitting out in Lodavar, out in the Galil, in the Gilad, adopted by some family we've never heard of, and Tziva is living it up. Vayomer Tziva l'Melech, k'chol asher yitzaveh Adoni HaMelech et avdo ken yaseh avdecha. Tziva says to the king, everything the king commands, I will do. I am your loyal servant. Your servant will obey. U'mifiboshet ochel al shulchani ki'achad mibnei HaMelech. Mephibosheth shall eat at my table like one of the king's children. This pasuk is a strange one. Why is it a strange one?
You'd expect him to be jealous and rebel.
Well, I have no doubt that he is jealous, and I have no doubt that he will rebel. Tziva is a slime. I have no other way to put it. Tziva is a pile of slime. We will get to his duplicity and disloyalty. Tziva is one of the most slimy characters in all of Sefer Shmuel. But this sentence in itself is odd, because on the one hand, here Tziva says to the king that whatever you have commanded, I will do. Vayomer Tziva l'melech k'chol asher yitzaveh Adoni HaMelech et avdo ken yaseh avdecha. Everything the king has commanded a servant shall do, referring to himself. U'mefiboshet ochel al shulchani k'echad mivnei HaMelech. So, what's the problem?
Who's saying that? Is Siva saying it or is David saying it?
Correct. That's exactly the problem. Who says this last half of the sentence? Mephibosheth ochel al shulchani ke'echad mimnei ha'melach. Mephibosheth shall eat at my table like one of the king's men, like one of the king's children. So that's a machlok of Rishonim. I'll show you the sources. That's a machlok of Rishonim. Rashi. Sorry, I'm just going to move this along. Give me 1 second, and I'll put this back where it belongs. Rashi splits the sentence in half. Ken yasev decha mefiboshet ochel al shulchani. Tziva amar, ken yasev decha. Tziva said, thus shall your servant do, obedient to the king's command. And David heshiv, and inserted into this moment right here, David responded and said, provided that you make sure, Mefiboshet ochel al shulchani ki echad mimnei ha'melech. He'll eat on my table. Hadak, on the other hand, saw this all as Tziva's response. Mefiboshet ochel al shulchani, af al pi shemefiboshet ochel al shulchani ki echad mimnei ha'melech, ולא יצטרך לכל הדבר הזה, אף על פי כן נעשה כמו שציוויתני. Says Tziva to David, I will do as you command, even though Mephibosheth sits at my table, like one of the king's children, he's honored to sit at my table, like one of the king's sons, why should he have to sit at your table? But okay, if that's what you really want, we can make it happen. Mephibosheth ochel al shulchani, says Tziva, ki echad mimnei ha'melech. Pshat-wise, I think Rashi is correct. From a pshat perspective, I think the second half of the sentence is said by David. Radak's interpretation is a little kvetched, but both of them give us a very good clue as to what kind of, you'll forgive the expression, what kind of scumbag we're dealing with. This Tziva is as bad as slimy as they come. Sitting on all of Shaul's wealth, while the only heir, legitimate heir to the wealth and to the throne, is sitting in exile in Gilad, a cripple who can't look after himself and has to be adopted by another family. And you, Eved Tziva, to your master, are sitting on your master's wealth and fields and living it up as if you were the king and you were the heir to the wealth. So in Sefer Mishlei, there's a phrase that is described here, Tachat Shalosh Ragza Aretz, V'tachat Arbalo Tuchal Seit, one of the three or four things that the earth trembles at, that cannot contain itself. And one of them is Tachat Eved Ki Yimloch, a servant who makes himself the king, or Shivcha Ki Tirash Ki Virta, a servant who makes himself the king, a servant who through duplicity and cheating, takes over the kingdom and pushes out the legitimate heirs to the throne. Tachat Eved Ki Yimloch. That's Tziva. Classic example of this. There's no other word for it. Who says to the king, I'll be happy to look after him. But okay, if you want him to eat at your table instead of mine, we can make that happen. You're an Eved to Shaul. Now you're an Eved to Mephibosheth. How dare you? Okay. And that's where the story ends. David puts Tziva in his place, ensures that Mephibosheth comes to live in the palace. Mephibosheth is now given proper dignity and honor and kavod that he deserves. David will look after him, and Tziva has been displaced as the master of the field. Okay, two pieces of postscript information. Number one, Ulemefiboshet ben Katan Ushmo Micha. Mephibosheth had a young child. His name is Micha. V'chol Moshav Beit Tziva Avadim Lemefiboshet. And now all that dwelt in the house of Tziva became servants to Mephibosheth. FYI, this pasuk gives me an inkling as to the time frame of this parak. Why? Nina, I think you said something, but you're on mute.
Oh, just because of mentioning Micha, because Micha is one of the tracer?
No, that's a different Micha. But it gives it, but you're close. Right? By mentioning that Mephibosheth has a child, a young child, the name of Micha, it gives me a time frame for the story. Why? How old was Mephibosheth when Shaul died on the battlefield of Har Gilboa?
Five.
Which means, we don't know how old Mephibosheth is here, but if he has a child, what are we talking about? He's 20, 20-something, right? So we're talking about at least 15 years since the beginning of the Sefer Shmuel Bet. One of the mysteries in the Sefer is that we don't have a time frame of the events that have transpired. His whole life, David, in Yerushalayim is 33 years in Yerushalayim. At this point, Perek Dalet, from between Perek Dalet and Perek Tet, more or less, at least 15 years or so has transpired. So we see, we read the stories in sequence, we don't always have a sense of timing. This story gives us a little bit of the picture of that timing in terms of sort of more or less in the middle of David's time and life in Yerushalayim. Mephibosheth is now old enough to have a child, and so that tells us we're dealing with an adult, not a child. And all of the house of Tziva is now servants to Mephibosheth. Mephibosheth yoshev b'Yerushalayim. And Mephibosheth moves, comes to Yerushalayim, ki al shulchan ha-melech tamid hu ochel. V'hu piseach shtei raglav. He's lame on both feet. He doesn't have to go out into the field, doesn't have to work. He lives in Yerushalayim, lives in the palace, eats at the king's table always. It's a debt David owes to Yonatan. Jan asks, where's the mother of Micha? Like everything else in that regard, we don't know. Typically, the mothers, when it comes to the kings, the mothers are always mentioned because kings had more than one wife. So it's always important to identify the children and who their mother is. Beyond that, it's not always consistent. Okay. That's the story of Mephibosheth. And if I stopped here, it would be a very nice story for David. It would be a very beautiful act of kindness that David bestows upon the house of Yonatan, and an indicator that his loyalty to Yonatan has survived in the test of time. And Mephibosheth, who is the injured party in all of this, figuratively and literally, comes to Yerushalayim to now be given his just deserts and what he deserves and what is his due, if you will, right? As the heir to Shaul's wealth. V'akol tov, v'akol yefeh, and everybody lives happily ever after. Except this is Tanakh. And in Tanakh, things don't work that way. So the first question that I want to throw out to you is a difficult one. And let's assume for the moment there's 15 years between this Perek and Perek Dalet. Let's assume. Why does it take David 15 years to discover that there's an heir to Yonatan and to Shaul's wealth? And for the last 15 years, Mephibosheth has been living in squalor out in Lo Davar, adopted child. And what, David forgot about him? Maybe he didn't know about him. But he certainly, it's not a surprise to David that Tziva is managing Shaul's land. That he knew, that is clear. Legitimately, not legitimately? Does David know who he's dealing with here? At least inquire? You understand the problem? There's a sequence of events here. There's a time frame here, 15 years, that is disturbing. Why is it taking David 15 years to wake up to Mephibosheth? You could argue, maybe, that David simply was busy. Right? He was busy. He was fighting this war. He was trying to unite the kingdom. He was fighting Yerushalayim. He was fighting the Plishtim. He was fighting. I'm not even 100% sure whether or not this story is before or after the story of Bathsheba or the story of the Battle of Aram. It's unclear. The timetable is a mystery. Right? But it is, but it's there. 15 years. That's part one of the mystery. David, where were you until now? Okay, so you could argue that I'm a little bit overcritical of David. You know, after all, he's busy and he's David and he makes good on his oath and his promise. And so it takes a couple of years. You could even argue that the story of Mephibosheth having a child is later. And that the story is earlier. Maybe. But we're not done with the story. And the story gets darker. So I'm going to just run through a quick review of the chapters to come. This is chapter 9. Chapter 10 is the Battle of the North, an expansion of David's kingdom, a battle that ends with the Battle of Ammon and the Siege of Ammon. And so chapter 11 begins with the battle of the Siege of Ammon, with David in Yerushalayim, and the story of Bathsheba. Okay, we're moving forward. Story of Bathsheba is chapter 11. In chapter 12, Natan, the Navi, comes to David to criticize him for his behavior with regards to Bathsheba, and more importantly, with regards to Uriah Achiti. End result, there's a onesh, and chapter 13. We'll deal with David and Bathsheba at length. I'm not going to skip it. Don't worry. Then we get to chapter 13. Chapter 13 is the story of Amnon and Tamar. In the aftermath of David's moral lapse with regards to Bathsheba, things begin to unravel. So the first thing that unravels is the internal dynamic of the household of David, his children, Tamar, Avshalom, Amnon, Amnon ben David, who loves his half-sister Tamar, and he ends up forcing his way with her, and then he despises her, and he throws her out, and Avshalom is very angry. So Avshalom orchestrates a moment in the field, and Avshalom kills Amnon. Okay, everybody lived happily ever after. Then in response to the fact that Avshalom killed Amnon, David sends Avshalom into exile. Avshalom barach v'elach gishur. And for 3 years, Avshalom is in exile. V'tachal David ha-melech hatzet al Avshalom, ki necham al Amnon ki met. David failed to long for Avshalom. He was comforted, meaning the exile of Shalom was for him a way of comforting him for the death of Amnon. We'll come to all these stories. There's a reason I'm moving forward. Chapter 14, Yoav has compassion on Avshalom. He realizes that David needs to return him, so he convinces David to go and allow Avshalom to return. Avshalom does, but David doesn't want to speak to him, doesn't want to see him anymore. Avshalom begins to seed the beginning of his rebellion. And eventually, he in fact does, and he opens up a full-scale rebellion. Vayimeach v'chen, v'yas lo Avshalom merkava, makes himself a chariot and horses and men before to ride before him. And he gets up in the morning and he gathers up his forces. And he says, okay, anybody who wants to the legitimate heir to the throne, follow me. We are removing David from the throne. The rest of the story is, in fact, just that. Avshalom goes and he launches a full-scale rebellion. It forces David into exile. So David says to all of his servants in Yerushalayim, it's time for us to go and run. Otherwise, we will all be wiped out by Avshalom. So they leave Yerushalayim. And David built Yerushalayim as the seat of the battle, as the seat of the capital of Israel, United Kingdom of Israel, in a rebellion of his own household, is forced into exile. Now, who goes with him is a whole story. Okay. That brings us to Perek Tetzayin. So now David is in exile. He's leaving Yerushalayim. He's headed out of Yerushalayim. He gathered all of his forces. He told all of his servants, everybody who's loyal to me, come with me. We're taking the government into exile. David avar ma'at me'arosh. David passed a little bit of from the top, meaning the hill. He's on his way out of Yerushalayim. And who comes to greet him? Our old friend, Tziva Na'ar Mephibosheth. Tziva and Mephibosheth's servant. And Tziva comes to greet him v'tzemed chamorim chavushim, with a couple of donkeys saddled with food, v'alehem atayim lechem u'me'a tzimukim, together with 200 loaves of bread and 100 clusters of raisins, u'me'a kayitz b'nei v'yayin, and the fruits and wine. Why does he bring him all these provisions? Why is he bringing David all these provisions? Why is he bringing all these provisions? To whom is he bringing them?
To David.
Right, to David, to and his small army, meaning his loyal band who have come with him as they go into exile. David is running away. He doesn't have food. The last time David ran away from the house of Shaul, he ran away without food. Remember that? He ended up in the city of Nov, and it cost the city of Nov their entire lives. Because Shaul, in his wrath, killed the city of Nov for giving him bread. Right? David is in exile. Who's going to give him bread? So Tziva comes and bring food to him and his entire entourage. As an expression of loyalty. Tziva, the loyal servant. So David says, what is all this to you? The donkeys are for the king's household to ride on. And the bread and the fruit is for your servants to eat. And the wine to bring to drink in the desert. David says, wait a second, we're missing somebody here. Where is your master's son? Meaning? Where is Mephibosheth? Now, before I look at the answer, Before I look at the answer, what do you think the answer is? Where is Mephibosheth? What do you think the answer is?
He's dead.
Excuse me?
He's been killed.
No, he's not killed. That far, Tziva wouldn't go.
David, isn't he?
He should be with David. He's not with David. That's why David inquires, where is your son? Where is Mephibosheth? Tziva comes to meet him, right? In other words, essentially, David has said, everybody who's loyal to me, out. We're going into exile.
But so, if David is leaving, who is he running away from?
He's running away from Avshalom. But that's the context. The context, we've moved five chapters into the future where he's running away from Avshalom. So he takes everybody who's loyal to him, right? That's the end of Perek, the previous Perek. Vayomer David lachol avadav asher ito b'Yerushalayim. All of his servants were with him in Yerushalayim. Kumu v'nivracha. Get up. It's time for us to leave. We're going to run. We're going to flee, because otherwise Avshalom will kill us all.
So is Mephibosheth with Avshalom?
Oh, so where is Mephibosheth? Where is Mephibosheth? So now the simple answer is, he's a cripple. He's a handicap. He can't get out on his own. So if he's going to be anywhere, it's going to be wherever.
Wherever Ziba put him.
Correct. Wherever Ziba
takes. Like in a dungeon.
Right? Vayomer HaMelech Vayei Ben Adonecha. Vayomer Ziba HaMelech. Now look what Ziba says. Hine Yoshev B'Yerushalayim. Ziba is sitting in Yerushalayim. Ki Amar Hayom Yashivu Li Beit Yisrael Et Mamlechut Avi. Because he said, now in this rebellion, the house of Israel will restore my father's kingdom to me. And so he accuses Mephibosheth of waiting for the insurrection to play itself out, so that the legitimate heir to the throne, namely himself, can be restored to the house of Shaul's throne. Now, do you really think that that's what Mephibosheth said? Not for a minute. Not for a minute. And Mephibosheth is a, you'll forgive me, he's a cripple. He's in the world of Tanakh, he would have no standing whatsoever. He barely survives. He's sitting in the grace of David's table. At David's table. You think Avshalom is going to orchestrate an entire rebellion against his father only to hand the reins and the keys to the throne back to the son of the grandson of Shaul?
Right.
Right? Not a chance. Not a chance. But what has Tziva just done? By accusing Mephibosheth of siding with the rebellion, what has Tziva just done? If David accepts this accusation,
Tziva will get back the land that was given to Mephibosheth.
Correct. Vayomer HaMelech leTziva, Hine lecha kol asher leMephibosheth. Okay, then I will give you back all the lands that I gave to Mephibosheth. And he buys the line hook, line, and sinker.
Why would David do that, knowing
that's the question.
In the history of the Ziba.
That's the question. That's the question we're going to have to answer. I'm not sure we're going to get to it today, but that's the question we have to answer.
The other thing is that last time we saw Mephibosheth, he was with David in Yerushalayim. So when did he...
Well, David has now left Yerushalayim.
But right? Why would David not have taken him with him?
So Mephibosheth stayed behind. That's exactly it. That's what David wants to know. Why is Mephibosheth not here? And Tziva's answer is, because he's siding with the rebellion. Now, is that true? We'll see in a minute. Vayomer l'Tziva, hishtachaveti. So Tziva says, I bow down, I prostrate myself before you. I should find favor in your eyes, my master, the king. Right. So he says to David, I humbly, not so humbly, but humbly accept all the lands of Shaul back from Mephibosheth. And the rest of the story continues. It's really quite a remarkable moment. David just bought this line from Mephibosheth, from Tziva, that Mephibosheth sided with the rebellion. Okay. We're not done yet. This is Perek Tzayin, David in exile. Now we move forward again. Perek Yudzayin. Yudzayin goes back to Yerushalayim. Avshalom's efforts to establish himself as the legitimate heir to the throne. Does a couple of things we'll talk about when we get there. and then we get to the war. Perek Yudchet, David goes into the area of Yar Ephraim, Machanaim, Eivar Yarden, area of the Gilad, and ultimately there's a major battle. It takes two chapters between Avshalom and his forces and David's forces, and David emerges victorious. Avshalom is killed in battle. The battle was in the heart of Ephraim, and there Avshalom gets caught by his hair, if you remember the story, and he dies. So once Avshalom dies, the rebellion is over, and David can return to Yerushalayim. Perek Yud-Tet. Okay, David recovers from the death of Avshalom, and he begins his journey back to Yerushalayim. End of Perek Yud-Tet. Yashav HaMelech v'yavod ha-Yarden, he comes to cross over the Yarden. Let's start one pasuk earlier. Vayetet levav kol ish Yehuda ki ish echad, the hearts of the people of Judah were united to support David in his return. Vayishlechu al HaMelech shuv atav v'chol avadecha, it's time for you to return to Yerushalayim. Vayashav HaMelech v'yavod ha-Yarden, king comes to the Yarden, Yehuda ba Gilgala, and Yehuda comes to the Gilgal to meet him. And there's a big reunion between the tribe of Yehuda and David, Vayimaher. Shimon ben Gera will talk about Binyamin. We'll leave Shimon ben Gera for now. Another story. Pasuk Chafei. Comes to Yerushalayim. And Mephibosheth ben Shaul comes to greet the king. He didn't dress his feet. I guess he had some sort of prosthetic or something that he used for his feet. He didn't trim his beard. Didn't wash his clothes. He looked like a mess. And he did that from the day the king departed until the day the king came back in peace. What is that telling me? What does it mean? He's in mourning. These are the practices of mourning. Mephibosheth sat in Yerushalayim. He can't move. He can't go on his own. He sat in Yerushalayim in mourning, waiting for David to return. David comes to Yerushalayim. Mephibosheth comes to greet him. David's first question to him, Ayomalo Amelech, Lama lo alachta imi Mephibosheth? Mephibosheth, why didn't you come with me? Where were you? Vayomar, so he says, Adonai HaMelech, my master, the king, Avdini Mani, my servant deceived me. Who is the servant who deceived him?
Tziva.
Tziva.
Ki amar avdecha, ech mishali achamor verkava le'avelech al HaMelech, ki fiseach avdecha. Your servant said, I'll go get my donkey and I'll ride and I'll go out to the king because your servant is lame. I can't do it myself. So he said he would go, he would bring me, he would take me, he would carry me, he would do something. Vayiragel ba'avdecha, and then he slandered me to your servant, to the king, al Adonai HaMelech. Adonai HaMelech ki malach elokim. You know the king, that my lord, the king is like an angel of God for what you have done, how you have treated me. And this, see, he deceived me. He ran out to you with the donkey. He said, oh, I'm just going to grab the king, let him know that you're on your way. And he slandered me to you. He told me that I was rebellious.
How does Mephibosheth know that Ziba slandered him to the king?
That story is out there in the public domain, right? David has disinherited Mephibosheth. He's given all his lands over to Tziva. I'm sure the news like that travel. Good news travels fast. Bad news travels faster. Ki lo ya ko bet avi, ki anshei mavet la'adoni amecha. Amalek, my father's house was deserving of death at the hands of the king. And you made your servant as one of the eaters at the king's table? Instead of killing me, you rewarded me with kindness? What can I yet do? How should I cry to the king? I throw myself at the mercy of the king. Clearly, I owe you my life. Now, if you were David, how would you react at this moment? Hearing now, for the first time, the other side of the judgment, right? Tziva accused him of treason, and Mephibosheth says, Tziva deceived me. Who would you believe?
Mephibosheth.
I mean, there's no reason to assume otherwise. As slime as Tziva is clear, right? David knew exactly who he's dealing with back in chapter 9. And this is the guy who, as an Eved, stole his father's land and threw Mephibosheth to the wolves and abandoned him out there in the Gilad for 15 years. And now the moment of the opportunity, Tziva says to David, oh, Mephibosheth is rebelling. He's waiting for them to return him to the throne as if they're going to make him the king. And he comes back to Yerushalayim and he sees the man in sackcloth and ashes and he says, why didn't you come with me? And he says, Tziva deceived me. Who would you believe?
Mephibosheth.
One of the saddest psukim comes next. Vayomer lo ha-melech, lama tedaber od dvarecha? Amarti, ata v'tziva tachleku et ha-sadeh. Tziva, Mephibosheth, I've heard enough. You and Tziva, I don't want to decide. You and Tziva will divide the land.
Sounds like Shlomo and the two mothers.
Yeah, very much so. You'll see the reaction here is similar to that moment. There's a lot of, there are mafreshim who suggest that Shlomo got the idea for his judgment from this story.
Why would he do that? Why didn't he just disinherit Tziva? Why would
Correct.
He give him anything?
That is the big, that is the question which we're going to address, not this week, but next week. But I want to see the whole story, but that is exactly the issue. Vayomer lo, vayomer Mephibosheth al ha-melech, gam et hakol yikach, achrei sheba adoni ha-melech b'shalom al beito. So Mephibosheth says, the land? Let him take the whole land. I don't care about the land. All I care about is that my master has returned peacefully and safely to the house.
Well, he's a better person than I am.
Okay. Now, just to understand how deep this tragedy goes, right? This is one of the extraordinarily saddest moments in David's life. There's no logic to it. And here's what Chazal had to say about it. Says Gemara in Shabbos, Rav Amar. It's Machlokes Rav and Shmuel, but we're going to follow the line of reasoning of Rav because I think it fits the pshat more. Kibel David Lashon Hara. At that moment, referring to the middle story, when David accepted Mephibosheth's accusation against Tziva's accusation against Mephibosheth, David is guilty of accepting Lashon Hara. Dichtiv ayomer ha-melech ve'ayeh ben adonecha ve'ayomer Tziva le-melech hinei yoshe b'yushalayim ki emar ha-yom yoshiv li-beit yisrael et mamlechut avi. David said, hey, Tziva, where's your master? He said, oh, he's waiting in Yerushalayim for the rebellion to turn in his favor. How do we know that David, in fact, accepted this Lashon Hara? Because it says, because he hands Mephibosheth, forget this, the wrong paragraph reference, he hands Mephibosheth the entire field. Then Mephibosheth comes and he, in fact, expresses the true story. He tells David the true story. Amar of Yehuda Marav, same Rav. Amar of Yehuda Marav. Now listen to this. B'shash Amar David le Mephibosheth, When David proclaimed judgment on Mephibosheth, and rather than adjudicating who was right and who was wrong and who was righteous and who was wicked and who was correct and who was evil, rather than determining the truth, David chose to throw up his arms and say, divide it. A voice from heaven emerged and said, if you're going to divide the field between Tziva and Mephibosheth, I will divide the kingdom between Rechavam and Yerevam. Amar Rav Yehuda Marav, Ilmale lo kibel David lashon hara, lo nechlaka malchut beit David. Had David not accepted this lashon hara, the kingdom would never have been divided. Velo avdu Yisrael avodah zarah, and Israel would never have worshipped idols. Velo galinu me'artzeinu, we never would have gone into exile. So there's a much deeper tragedy in this story than just David's mistreating of Mephibosheth, and that's the story that we're going to come back to and try to unravel B'ezrat Hashem next week. So today we kind of went through the whole story, went through all three chapters, the events of Mephibosheth, asked a lot of questions. Next week we'll try to pull a lot of the threads together and see if we can understand. We're not gonna, David doesn't emerge pretty from the story, but nonetheless, we need to understand what's going through his mind, what's going through his head, and ultimately how it plays out in the events that transpire subsequently. Okay, questions? No, and then with that, we will adjourn.
Thank you very much.
See you, thank you, Rabbi.
Next week.
Thank you.
Yes, thank you.
Bye.
Thank you. Bye.